When I first came back to the States after all those years in Thailand, especially as I came to know some of the Buddhist communities here in the country, I had a sense of culture shock. In Thailand, there was a very strong sense that the Dharma was here to protect us. The phrase, "the Dharma protects those who practice it," is something very common over there. And of course, the idea of refuge, basic to everything. In the Dharma textbook, they said these are the basic principles of the teaching, not the Four Noble Truths, not the three characteristics, but the Triple Refuge. Of course, the Four Noble Truths come under Dhamma. But the notion of refuge comes first. Came back here and everybody was celebrating interconnectedness. There seemed to be no sense of danger at all. Things began to change a little better around 2001. And more, we were coming to see that interconnectedness leaves us exposed to all kinds of dangers. We used to celebrate how wonderful it was that we could depend on people all around the world to keep the network going. And now it's breaking down. And we realize that we can't depend on it for our support. And as the Buddha would have pointed out, probably never really could depend on it. That's the whole reason for practicing the Dharma given by Venerable Sariputta. A group of monks came to see him one time. They were about to go off to another part of India where Buddhism had not yet spread. And Sariputta asked them, they're intelligent people there. When they ask you, what does your teacher teach, what are you going to tell them? They said, well, we'd like to hear what you'd have to tell them. He started out by saying, our teacher teaches the subduing of desire and passion. Then imagine a continuing conversation. Desire and passion for what? Of the five aggregates. What's the benefit of abandoning desire and passion for those things? Because when those things change, if you haven't abandoned your desire and passion for them, you're going to suffer. If you have to abandon your desire and passion, you won't suffer. So there it is. Change is seen as something that even though it does have its positive side, it has a very strong negative side as well. And in the interconnected system, things can change very easily. So the Buddha says you have to learn how to depend on yourself. Atahi atano nato. The self is its own mainstay. And in Thailand, there's one teacher who made us the theme of his teachings as he got older and older. The Buddhism was all about not being selfish. And the word, no, be selfish in Thailand. You can translate it as don't look out for yourself. And John Swat would always take issue with that teaching. He said, you've got to look after yourself. You've got to look after your well-being, because who else is going to look after it for you? But there's the question, are you going to do it wisely or not? And he, of course, is saying, well, you want to do it wisely. In other words, it doesn't mean you just run over other people to get what you want. You have to take their well-being into consideration. You have to treat them well. You have to create good karma. That's your treasure. Another teaching from Ajahn Sawat. He said the Buddha talks about all these things that are not self, not self, not self. But there's one thing where he says it's ours. I am the owner of my actions. You do have to take responsibility for your actions. And the thing is, you can. That's the good news about the Buddhist teachings. It's not the case that we're subject to forces beyond our control, that everything that we're going to experience now is totally determined from the past. There's an element of choice. He doesn't explain that much. when he heard that there were some people who were teaching that everything you experience now in terms of pleasure or pain all comes from past actions, he actually went and argued with those people. It's not typical for the Buddha to go out and argue with people. There would be some people come to argue with him, but it was rare for him to seek other people out for argument. But he did in this case, because he said this was a really bad teaching. Because people would be left unprotected and bewildered in his terms. In other words, there would be no reason to think there was anything you should do or shouldn't do, because everything was determined by the past. But, he said, that's not the case. So we do have this ability now to decide what to do. We have our choices, and we can make them freely. It's there that our refuge is going to be found as we train ourselves in line with the Buddhist example. The example of the Dhamma and the Sangha. That's what it means to take refuge in them. The word sarana that we translate as refuge can also be translated as something to keep in mind. Always keep in mind the virtues of the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. Use them as your guide, because they protect you, and especially in the areas that deserve most protection. There was another time when he was talking to the monks. He said there are five kinds of loss. Three of them are not all that serious. Two of them are very serious. The ones he said are not serious are actually things that people in the world hold to very dearly and really don't want to see that there would be loss. This is a case of loss of your health, loss of your wealth, loss of your relatives. But as he said, when you lose those things, you don't go to hell. However, the loss of your right view and loss of your virtue, that would be serious. Because when you lose those things, you can go to hell. Well, some people don't like to think about the idea that they have to take into consideration their fate after death. Just recently, one of my students got into an argument with AI over the question of whether there should be a theory of just war in Buddhism. And the AI bot, I don't know which one it was saying that the idea of absolutely not killing in any circumstances is pretty idealistic. But you want to be practical, though, you have to have a theory of just war. So my student asked the AI, what is your definition for practical or pragmatic? And it stopped for a while. And so it got its ideas from a variety of sources. Well, what if you took the Buddha's ideas about what was practical into account? Is it really worth it to go around killing just for the sake of what? Maintaining a boundary? And AI finally had to admit that, no, it wasn't worth it if you thought in those terms. Well, think in those terms. When the Buddha taught about karma and rebirth, it wasn't the case that he was just thoughtlessly carrying on ideas he picked up for his culture. Because his culture had a wider variety of beliefs and philosophies than we do now. That was one of the other things that struck me when I came back to the States. Is what a narrow range of alternatives we have here in terms of ways of thinking. In terms of the media, our educational system. Back in the time of the Buddha, all kinds of things were on the table. It wasn't the case that everybody believed in rebirth. Even those who did believe in rebirth didn't all agree that your actions had anything to do with what was going to happen to you after you were born. They couldn't even agree whether action was real or not, whether you were real or not. So when the Buddha set out his teachings, it wasn't the case he was just following what everybody else thought at the time. Out of that forest of leaves that he came to know in the course of his awakening, this is part of the handful. Think about your fate after you die. take that into the equation as you decide what to do and what not to do, what to protect and what not to protect. So those that we love, as John Lee says, they're like magnets that we leave behind in the world. They pull us back. So getting back our lost loved ones is actually easier than you might think. Whereas when you've lost your virtue, lost your right view, it's actually harder to get those things back than you might think. In the meantime, you're going to suffer quite a lot. So, have a strong sense of what really needs to be protected. And in protecting your virtue and your right view, you're going to be protecting others. At the very least, they don't have to fear any danger from you. In the Buddhist terms, you're providing universal safety. And then because that safety is universal, you're going to have a portion of it too. If there are gaps in your safety that you provide to others, in other words, there are cases in which you would break the precepts. It's like having a fence around your house that has big gaps in the fence. All the animals that you would want to keep out can get in through the gap. So you want to be strict about your precepts. And as for maintaining right view, what it basically comes down to is seeing that your actions are your most important possession. So you want to be very careful about them. And these are things that lie with totally under your control. And the fact that you're going to lose your relatives, lose your wealth, lose your health, this is going to happen with no matter what you do. But as for your virtue and your right views, you can lose them only if you throw them away. So the things that are most valuable in life are the things that you can protect. You can bring them under your control. And that's good news. So as the world changes and things begin to fall apart, you have something within you that doesn't fall apart. As things get out of control, you have something that is in control. When you train yourself. So this is how you think about the concept of refuge. It's not the case that the Buddha is going to come down and save you, but he teaches you the Dharma by which you can keep yourself safe. And that's a real gift. There's so much wrong view in the world that when you come across right view, try to see how precious it is. And how much you really can rely on it. For all that's really worth maintaining.